And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. She will be with us in just a second. She is a couple of blocks away. Our guest today is Robert Camina. He is a documentary filmmaker. His new film that is not out yet, so we are the first exclusive pre-release interview with Robert Camina. His new film is Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
And a warm good morning to you, because it is a lovely, warm, sultry day here in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
It's nice, in the 70s, snowing. It's just beautiful. But we do that. You can go to any radio station, get a correct weather forecast. Here you come to get a completely incorrect one. Where should we start? This is a story that has been going on for now 2.5 years.
Right.
Basically, I think the story has come to a nice conclusion. But what was the Raid of the Rainbow Lounge?
Well, the Raid of the Rainbow Lounge, for your listeners who don't know, or it's been 2.5 years.
Yeah.
On June 28th, 2009... members from the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, agents from that agency, and members from the Fort Worth Police Department raided the Rainbow Lounge, a gay bar in Fort Worth, Texas. On a second weekend, it was open, and it resulted in multiple arrests and injuries. A young man went to the hospital with multiple skull fractures, bruising on the face, bleeding on the brain, and he was sent to the ER and was there for about 7 days.
Everything in this raid, and you're calling it the raid, Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission would call it an inspection.
The term depends on who you
And the Fort Worth Police, I'm not sure what they would call it. They would call it just assisting on an inspection. Because that's what was supposed to have been going on that night, right?
That's what was supposed to be going on. It was supposed to be a typical bar inspection.
Now, when you spoke to people from TABC or from the police, what was supposed to go on that night? It was a new bar, and it's not unusual for a new bar to be inspected. In fact, it's routine for a new bar to be inspected. So what were they supposed to be doing?
Well, from the interviews that I conducted, what they were supposed to go in and do is just do a typical bar inspection. Go in, check the liquor bottles, check to make sure the bartenders had their TABC. They were TABC certified. A lot of administrative work. To see people who are possibly underage, card them, those type of things.
So making sure that a new bar was upholding Texas law.
Correct.
Okay, so the way they normally do that is what?
From what I understand, the way that they go in there is they have a protocol that they go in. They have clipboard. They go in a specific attire and go through a sort of a checklist. That's not what occurred that night.
Okay, you said, first of all, specific attire. How are they supposed to be dressed?
Well, I'll tell you how they're not supposed to be dressed. The TABC agents that came through that night came in special event uniforms, which was a polo shirt and khaki pants. And on the back of the polo shirt, it said State Police. That was the only visible sign, immediately visible sign, that they were law enforcement officers. But you'd have to be from behind them. Now, their badge was on their belt, but in a crowded bar.
Who looks at the belt?
Right.
Well, they're thinking in a gay bar every
well.
Day. they're supposed to be dressed how? Are they supposed to be in a suit? Are they supposed to? What are they supposed to? How are they supposed to present?
You know what? I don't have those specifics.
Okay. But how they were dressed was inappropriate. Now, they were accompanied by 5 or so Fort Worth police officers?
It was 7.
7?
Yeah.
Okay. And what are the police officers supposed to be doing? I mean, they're not trained in TABC rules. They're not there to enforce TABC rules. I guess a police officer, if something illegal is going on, can do the arrest, but they're not there to do the inspection. So why 7 police officers on an inspection?
You know, that was part of the controversy. Why did they see that there was need of such force to do an inspection like that? And, you know, as time went by and as results came out, that amount of force was deemed probably excessive. That a new bar check policy emerged out of the raid, and the type of force that was used at the Rainbow Lounge that night now would represent what is now the highest tier of bar inspection conducted by the Fort Worth Police Department.
So it's what you would do if you had reports of illegal activity going on, drugs and fights and all kinds of other things like that, maybe.
Correct. If there was a clear history of violations, then the amount of force that they used that night would be justifiable. But that didn't exist back then. That policy didn't exist back then. So that's why discipline was so light. It's because the officers didn't violate existing policy at that time.
Okay, so they were really not violating existing policy, but did you ever get from, in your research, did you ever get from Fort Worth Police why they even thought seven police officers not was appropriate, not was, you know, why that was anything more than a waste of police effort?
No.
No. Okay. Now, it was significant that this happened on June 28th, 2009, and had it happened on June 29th, 2009, it would have gotten half the amount of publicity that it had gotten. What was significant about that date?
Well, June 28th, 2009 was the 40th anniversary of the raid of the Stonewall Inn, the gay bar in New York City, which the raid of that bar, for most people, it signifies the launch of the modern gay rights movement.
So people were out that night celebrating the 40th anniversary of Stonewall.
Some people. Some, you know, the younger set, I have to, you know, have to say, they probably didn't even know what Stonewall was. But you know, for us as a community, it was a very significant day. It wasn't the 39th anniversary. It wasn't the 41st anniversary. It was a, you know, landmark 40th anniversary.
But for old people like Patty, that really was a significant anniversary.
It was. And actually, we were in Dallas. We had an enormous event going on that particular day. And so we had a lot of people gathered to march down Cedar Springs and in Dallas and celebrate the 40th anniversary of the raid of the Stonewall Inn.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that went on Sunday, the 29th.
Yeah, right. Right. We did it on Sunday.
Right.
But the very first thing everyone heard, like about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock that morning, and we were gathering like at, you know, to march at like noon, were, you know, everybody's cell phones were going off because this raid had occurred hours before in Fort Worth. And so we were gathering bits and pieces of information, learning what was going on, and ultimately the whole group picked up and moved to Fort Worth.
Well, and before that even happened, you and I were on the air then. Lambda Weekly used to be on Sundays at noon, and mm-hmm. So, you know, Channel 8 didn't pick up on it. You and I were the ones who were the first ones to actually report on this raid. And I started getting calls like at 5 in the morning from people who had actually been there telling us, you're not going to believe what happened. Huh? Who is this? This is Todd Camp.
We were beginning to hear that there were lots of injuries. Then we heard, no, it was no one. And then it was just a few. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a couple of officers. No, it was a whole bunch of officers. And so we weren't sure what information was correct. And that became clarified a little bit through the day,
right,
on Sunday. But we picked up and we had our signs out and we went to Fort Worth. And I would say it was a pretty sizable crowd.
It was a couple of hundred people that gathered outside the Tarrant County Courthouse.
Yeah, they first gathered outside the Rainbow Lounge for a pre-rally and then moved to Tarrant County Courthouse.
For a demonstration, a protest, that Sunday afternoon on the 29th. Now, Robert, were you actually at the Rainbow Lounge that night? Because after that, you got pretty involved.
Yeah. I was not at the Rainbow Lounge that night, you know, but I was involved about as soon after that as I possibly could.
It never seemed from the beginning like anybody in Fort Worth quite got it. I know at the Dallas Voice that week, we had several people, because we were calling Fort Worth police and asking them about what happened and their response, and we were talking to Fort Worth City Council people, and there were several people from the police department who said to us, you know, can I ask you something off the record? And, you know, we said, sure, because we were as reporters on it, we really were trying to be as above the story as possible, because that's what you do, if you know, let the story tell itself. And we had several people from the police department say, okay, now you have to believe that this had nothing to do with Stonewall, because we don't know what it is. What is it? And they were honestly asking us, what is it? And when they heard, because my answer was the same as yours to one of the officers I was talking to, well, Saturday night was the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion in New York, which was the birth of the gay rights movement, and people were out celebrating the 40th anniversary of the birth of the gay rights movement. And the answer that I got and that other people in the office got when they were talking to officers was, oh,
they couldn't have picked a worse day,
yeah,
or well, a better day. They depending on how you look at it, you know.
You know, they could have. It could be the 50th anniversary, which will be a bigger celebration. Well. So that could be a worse day, but there was no intent there.
In my opinion, mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Yeah,
you know, there are people out there who are convinced that it was planned. I believe in my heart that it wasn't. It wasn't planned. It was just a scary coincidence.
You know, the only part of it that almost made it not coincidence, sort of, I'm not blaming the TABC or Fort Worth police on this, is that when Rainbow Lounge opened, that he might have pushed the opening and made sure he was open, knowing that 40th anniversary of Stonewall's coming up, and wanted to make sure that on a big day that he wanted to be open for part of Pride Month, and to make sure he was open in time. And TABC does normally inspect during the first few weeks that a bar's open. I mean, that's pushing it.
I think that is pushing it. But, you know, it's definitely possible. But I really don't think it had anything to do with it, you know, just... It happened when it happened.
Completely oblivious.
People in the bar were completely oblivious.
I think they were oblivious. I think the bar might have been, let's make sure we're open in time for Pride, for part of Pride Month. And that's the only part of it that, because they were open in time for Pride Month, because it was a new bar, that's when the raid took place. We're talking to Robert Camina. Excuse me, he is a doctor.
I've got you all choked up now.
I do. I really do. The story just does get to me. Robert Camina is a documentary filmmaker. His new film is Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. A few weeks ago, you're just about finished with the film right now.
Yes.
A few weeks ago, actually a couple of months ago, you got a new narrator for your film.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was really excited to announce that... TV icon Meredith Baxter, who most people would know from Family Ties, Family.
From Family.
Yes.
And guess who else?
From Family.
Yeah. Meredith Baxter played the older sister, Christy McNichol. Both of them have come out now.
Yeah.
Although we always said that Christy McNichol was the original lesbian character on TV. We always loved her for that.
Well, there was Zelda, but you'd have to go way back to get Zelda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first good modern lesbian character on TV. But anyway, so how did that happen?
Well, you know, fairly early on when this film started coming together as a full-length film, yeah, I started thinking about narrators, and it was really clear that I wanted a celebrity narrator. And one of the first people that came to mind was Meredith. And I set my sights on it, and as fate would have it, I was able to get a dinner with her this fall and talk to her about...
When she was here for Out and Equal?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was able to get a dinner with her and a meeting, and the next morning I had a text from her saying, I'm in. So I was really, really thrilled and really happy to have her last month.
And I'll bet, you know, when she was here for Out and Equal... Yeah, she had just finished writing her autobiography, and she did a book signing on Cedar Springs. So you got her at just the right point. I mean, she was weak then because she was getting all this gay love, and she was really having a wonderful time that week because it was the best conference. It really was. I have a feeling that her doing this documentary was just liberating for her to do that. Hey, I can be an out, open lesbian and contribute something to the community.
Well, I can't speak on her behalf, but you know, I we had a good time. You know, I think you know, it was a real whirlwind of an experience, in and out in one day. But we talked about the raid, we talked about what it means to the LGBT movement, and she was on board from the beginning.
Now, it happened before she was out. Did she talk about, when you first met with her, what she had heard about it?
She'd heard a little bit about it, but she, you know, her personal life had her own, you know, drama at that time. So she knew a little bit about it, but I had to kind of fill in the blanks.
Interesting. I think that's a great way to bring your whole film together.
I was thrilled. Like I said, it was a vision that I had, and I was really happy that I was able to see it through.
But if you had just waited a couple of weeks, you could have gotten Christy McNichol, the lesbian icon from 1980, from Family.
I love Meredith, so.
Oh, sure, sure. We need to take a break in just a minute, but once the raid happened, I mean, that's really just a small part of the story. They came in. It was maybe 30 minutes total that they were in the bar.
A little bit longer than that.
Maybe an hour?
Not quite that long, but...
Somewhere between, yeah. Two people got injured.
Well, one person was sent to the hospital. Another person reports that he went to the hospital after he was released from jail. And then a couple other people reported that they had a bruised thumb or, you know, twisted thumb or marks on their wrists from... the wrist ties being too tight, but only one person went to the hospital.
And Chad, who was the person who was injured, he was in the hospital about 7 days, mm-hmm. but his medical treatments continue till today.
From what I understand, yes.
Okay. That's only a small part of the story, though, because most of the story happened, like you said, Patty, there was a demonstration in Dallas celebrating Stonewall, which got maybe 100 people from Dallas to go to Fort Worth for the first time in their lives. especially, I'll bet you it was the first time in their lives for anything gay, even if they had been over there. Well, for the museums, yeah, that's kind of gay. But first time for anything like this. And it was the first time that any kind of gay activism started happening in Fort Worth.
True. Of this level, you know, you had the anti-discrimination ordinance that passed. What was it? 2000 in 2000. So there was some activism then, but not like this.
Nothing like this. That was more of a. And we can talk about the difference between those two. We need to take a break, but that was more of a very calm and rational discussion that people had that got that ordinance passed. This was out of really anger. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink. Our guest is Robert Kamina. His new film that will be... When will it be out?
It will be out in March.
In March. It's called Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Find out about upcoming events from KNON. See pictures from past KNON events. Need info about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station produced page for Facebook. It's the best way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share us with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitution.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
WTBN. Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with...
You're listening to North Texas Polka Radio on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth.
Okay, so I had that on continuous play, and it shouldn't have been, and that's Alex introducing a different show, a show that... Oh, this is a good time to do a promo. Introducing my show on Sunday afternoon, North Texas Polka Radio, and join us for North Texas Polka Radio on Sundays at 1. I had to think. Sundays at 1, right. We're talking to Robert Kamina. He is the filmmaker who made the new film, Raid of the Rainbow Lounge, that'll be out in March. During the break, we were just talking about these inspections, and let's call it what it was supposed to be for a minute. Inspections are supposed to be done, or mostly are done, very professionally during the day, during the week, because a lot of the TABC agents, they're 9-to-5 people, Monday to Friday people. They go in, they inspect. What they're looking for are things like, is the hot water running in the bathroom? And I got some of this from a Dallas police officer who occasionally goes on these. If there are other people in the bar, if somebody has a question about what's going on, they go over to the person who's there and say, no, this is just an inspection, and we're just making sure that the tax stamp or whatever it is, label, is actually on the bottle, and that they're using liquor that's legal to be sold and taxes have been paid. You know, that kind of thing is what they're mostly looking for. But this happened on a Saturday night.
And things took a dramatic turn when the officers then alleged that patrons were reaching for them in sexually explicit ways. One officer saying that it was like as if a patron was having sex with him from behind.
Oh, that's just so incredibly unbelievable. I mean, it's not even plausible to me.
It's absolutely offensive. You know, and then that patrons were...
But, Patty, last time you were in a bar... Don't you remember that time that you were groping that police officer because...
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right.
You know, it's like, happens all the time.
Who does that?
Right. And not just... Okay, let's be honest. I think we all know that one person who might be so drunk...
Patty.
That would do that. But it was multiple allegations. Patty. Multiple people... Yeah. Multiple officers alleged that multiple people did this, you know...
A whole bar full
like
of people.
It was like a sea of orgy, right. Kind of thing happening. And it was just so incredibly over the top, unbelievable.
And that's what the incident report later revealed. I mean, the incident report itself wasn't released according to protocol, but that's a whole other controversy. But, so the TABC officer alleged that Chad Gibson had grabbed his groin. And... That's Agent Aller's adverb description of that action between the two changed over time. Sometimes it was slapped, sometimes it was backhanded, sometimes it was a hit, tapped. You know, a grab to me means something completely different than a tap. And the narrow hallway is very narrow that this...
Or as they were throwing him down to the floor, who knows where his hands... ended up as seven people were throwing him down to the floor.
Well, it wasn't that many people on top of him at that time, but
okay.
But you know,
how many was it actually that brought him down? I thought it was.
I don't remember. I think it's three or four. I have to go back to my facts.
Still
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Well, there was. Yeah. Well, the Agent Aller said that the grabbing of the groin was an indicator that he was publicly intoxicated, and that's when they threw him against the wall. And then ultimately took him to the ground.
Now, one of the reasons for police to go on these raids is that if somebody is publicly intoxicated, they would arrest the person or put them into protective custody. They don't generally go to jail. They go to, I know Dallas has what's affectionately called the drunk tank. It is downtown. It's right near City Hall. And the point is for the person to sleep it off so that they're... Yeah, and they'll be cited with something, but it's not going to be like... it's not like a regular arrest. But the point is to protect them from injury. So how does slamming somebody against the wall protect that person who's drunk from injury?
Well, let's go back to what public intoxication is. It's two-pronged. You've got to be intoxicated, and you have to be a danger to yourself or others. one has to ask the question, how is the grabbing of a groin, alleged grabbing of a groin, or tapping, or backhand, or slaps, a danger, you know, to yourself or others? So that raises a question. And the other people that were arrested, their signs of public intoxication that the officers cite are bloodshot eyes, alcohol on the breath. How is that a danger to yourself or others? So that was a huge sticking point in the controversy, and the public intoxication policy has been revised because of that. And that's one of the greater goods for not just the LGBT community, but for the city, and to protect the officers themselves. I mean, this protects both ways.
Okay, so let's go on a little bit, because
sure.
The raid happened, it was somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour. You know, normally an inspection is much shorter than that, but 30 minutes to an hour. People go home, other than the seven or eight were arrested.
Five.
It was five arrested.
Five and Chad went.
And Chad went to the hospital. So six people. But other than that, everybody goes home, starts making calls at 3 a.m. to radio shows and other people to wake them up in the middle of the night and let them know what. But everybody knew by 9 a.m. It seemed like the gay community in Dallas absolutely knew what was going on.
And in fact, when we jumped in our car to go to Fort Worth, in my car was my partner Aaron, who at the time was president of Stonewall Democrats of Dallas, and Omar Narvaez, who is now the current president, and Larry Duncan, who is the president of Dallas County Schools. So we all jumped in the car together. So it was a lot of people who felt strongly about it, and many, as you said before the break, who hadn't been to Fort Worth before.
It was a very scary time. Going back now, we did not know what was happening, what was going on, what was behind it, and conspiracy theories were common, and that was one of the challenges behind making the film, is we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know what was going to happen, so I kind of had to be the eyes and ears.
So how did you become involved, and when did you become involved and decide that this is a film?
Well, that morning of the 29th, I woke up and read my news on Facebook, as I tend to do, and I'd seen that Todd Camp, he had been at Rainbow Lounge the night before. He's
celebrating his birthday.
Yeah. He's artistic director of Q Cinema, and he was there celebrating his birthday, and he wrote about what had happened. And, you know, I had to wipe the sleep from my eyes and reread that to make sure I understood exactly what happened. And I had just finished my previous film. We had debuted it at Q Cinema just a few weeks prior. It was a comedy musical. And so I was in that little bubble, that little afterglow, if you will, thinking about my next project. Well, when I read that, like, I don't know what's going on, but I need to get this on camera. And luckily, I had batteries charged, tapes. I grabbed my camera, went down to Lee Park to get some of the Million Gay March
rally.
Because
you knew that the march was going on that day. That was just going to be part of it.
And then I then I went to Fort Worth. And at that time, I thought it was going to be a great short film. And that's what I started making. And 2.5 years later, I've got a 103-minute full-length documentary.
So you started off with a short film that evolved. What made it evolve, though, was not this one little event. I guess you put it into historical context of Stonewall, but everything that happened in Fort Worth afterwards. Now, the first thing that happened, there wasn't a city council meeting that week. Mm-mm. It was the week after,
it
wasn't
was like
it?
2 weeks. Yes,
it was 2 weeks because it was summer. It was middle of July, and city council doesn't meet every week during the summer. So you went to that city council meeting.
Yes.
Expecting what?
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. You know, I knew that there was going to be a lot of people there, which there were. I mean, it was overflow.
Which is unusual for a Fort Worth City Council meeting.
Yes, yes, it is. They were. I think they said that's the fullest it had ever been, or close to it. They weren't expecting that kind of a crowd, because at that point, City Council, I think the mayor and City Council really didn't know what was going on and how this had touched the community.
Now, it took Rainbow Raid of the Rainbow Lounge took place on a Saturday night. The mayor didn't even make a statement about it. Not even he said later that he was worried about liability for the city, but it wasn't even so much as a well, we wish, you know, Chad, who was the one who was injured, we wish him get well soon. It was nothing like that until that Friday.
It took a while for him to make a statement, and at that, it was still a very cautious comment.
I'm saying that he should have made that statement, like, Sunday or Monday.
Oh, I agree.
He didn't even make that statement
on Friday.
I agree.
He had a very hands-off attitude for a long time. You know, he even had a hands-off attitude, I feel, at the city council meeting. Because, you know, he said... Because the city council meeting, this was at the back of the agenda, almost last on the agenda. And people were screaming and yelling in the city council meeting. And he said, you know, I hope you're as passionate about homelessness as you are about this issue. Well, that comment itself just shows how out of touch he was with what was going on. I mean, not that homelessness isn't a serious issue. I'm not taking away anything from that. But just to discount...
He didn't understand the anger that
yeah,
was going
yeah,
on
and
in
the hurt. He by the time that meeting was over with, he understood.
Now, one person in that room, I think, really did understand. There was a new city council person at the time, and that was Joel Burns. But there was a council person, Kathleen Hicks, who represents the area where Rainbow Lounge was, and she was pissed. I mean, she understood exactly what was going on. Joel had visited Chad in the hospital. He certainly knew, but Kathleen didn't care. I mean, was that your impression too, Patty?
I thought she was royally pissed. And I think... I have to say, just give massive kudos to Joel Burns, because I think he helped navigate for his fellow council members, certainly. Because it was a long process, I think, afterwards, you know, where things began to unfold and policies changed and all of that stuff that was beginning to happen. And I think he provided real leadership, not only to his fellow council members, but in the community. And it's just, you know, hats off to Joel Burns for his efforts through that process. And there was sort of a void, so to speak, of clear leadership in the LGBT community of Fort Worth. And
At that time. It's changed.
It
has definitely changed since then.
And I think given that void, Joel really stepped in and was sort of that pivot person, that go-to person to kind of coordinate in everybody's efforts. You know, I don't know if that's... a mischaracterization.
No,
that's my impression.
I think you're right. You know, I don't think we'll ever know the full impact, but I think his presence on the board provided a face to the issues. Some of those people may never have had such close contact with an LGBT person. So I think he definitely was put a face to it.
Well, and there were an awful lot of... meetings thereafter, mm-hmm. City council meetings, where some of the larger public, and particularly the bigots out there, you know, tried to make a presence in some sort of opposition. It was a weird dynamic, I think, with their message didn't fit. And certainly when it came time, for example, there was a, you know, addition of gender identity and expression into the non-discrimination ordinance and employment policies. And, you know, their opposition to that was really bizarre. Because there aren't really any specifically anti-transgender, you know, verses in the Bible. And so they were really, that was really strange. But that was all lots of sequelae after all that.
Now, Fort Worth was actually very used to things being done in a very orderly, congenial manner. And in 2000, they amended the city charter to... have non-discrimination against based on sexual orientation. How controversial was that? Do either of you actually know?
Well, I believe it was they had tried before and had failed, and so it wasn't a slam dunk. If I'm remembering my history correctly, it wasn't a slam dunk. But you know, it was one of the first, you know, in Texas. I don't remember the statistic, but. That's, you know...
I believe it was the first one in Texas.
You know, I don't think people think that about Fort Worth, Cowtown, you know, Texas. And so...
Because Dallas didn't do one until 2 years later.
Right, 2002 was when the Dallas ordinance went through.
But I remember Chuck, and I'm losing his name here.
Silcox?
Silcox. Yes, he's the late Chuck Silcox now. But a council member who really kind of spearheaded that effort, and a straight man.
And their ordinance was employment non-discrimination for city employees, right? Or was this... this was city non-discrimination like we got 2 years later. Because Dallas's city employee non-discrimination is back in the 90s.
Right.
So this was a non-discrimination ordinance within the city. And I guess at the point it went through, they had a very calm discussion. There must have been the detractors, but it did pass.
It did.
So,
and it did come into play, I think, in when the raid happened. I think a lot of people were saying, okay, this is where we exercise this, you know, protection that we're supposed to have, because mm-hmm. it clearly didn't happen, you know, on the ground, so to speak, during the event.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it went to the city council. What happened at that city council meeting? People were angry that, you know, the mayor said, we're going to talk about homelessness first, and I hope you're as passionate about homelessness. And he's right, we should be. And that the mayor should be the one leading the fight to do something about it. But but it got finally to speakers, and what happened with those speakers?
Well, the journey to those speakers was kind of a rocky one, because it was at the last of the agenda, and there were certain people in the city council chambers that really wanted it pushed up. And, you know, I think for good reason. You know, there was... You don't always have people that go... You have the same goal, but you don't go about it the same way. And there were
a lot
of...
That was tactful.
Trying to be. You know, and so there were different ways of people with different tactics going in there. And you had a group from Queer Liber Action come in to the meeting and start using their tactics, which is, they're a direct action group. They're very out, they're very vocal, and I admire them for that. They caught a lot of heat for what they did.
And they caused the issue to get a lot of attention in the news media that it wouldn't have gotten had it been just, okay, we're here to discuss yeah. the raid on the Rainbow Lounge.
It's true. And, I mean, they accomplished something. But, you know, Blake Wilkinson stood up and demanded that the mayor move... no, he didn't demand. He did... I kindly request. He did say that. I don't say that the agenda item be moved up. And it caused a stir. And I was videoing, not knowing what was going to happen. And I'd gotten a text message from one of the Queer Liber Action members saying that Blake was prepared to be arrested. And honestly, that freaked me out. I didn't know what to expect, because tension was high and emotions were running high. And I had to make a split decision. Do I get involved? Do I tell someone? Or am I a spectator? And I decided to be a spectator.
And let things play out.
Yeah.
What were you afraid of that might happen?
I didn't know what Blake was capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a very passionate man. And I wish, you know, we all had as much, you know, passion as he does.
But Blake was just one person. Mm-hmm. Tensions were high in that room. Very. Patty, you were there at that council meeting? Or
I don't
were
know
you
if I was there at that one.
Okay, but other people were.
Yeah. We were. There were lots of subsequent meetings.
There were lots of people who were there who were pissed. And when the issue wasn't getting a whole lot of attention, or it seemed to be, oh, yes, we will discuss this, and there wasn't the acknowledgement of these people are here and angry, I was worried at the time that there were going to be fights and mass arrests of everybody who was there. We're talking to Robert Kamina. He is the filmmaker of the new film Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. It'll be out in March. He's just finishing it up now, and we have the first pre-interview of the filmmaker before he goes on national tour, international tour?
Sure.
Oh, okay. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
Red Hot and Blue presents the 13th annual KNON Blues Festival, Saturday, January the 28th, and Sunday, January the 29th at Port Davis Pub. This is KNON's own Greg A. Smith, here to tell you all about it. Get your tickets for a great show with Jim Shuler and Monkey B, James Butler All-Star Blues Review with myself, Greg A. Smith, Ernie Johnson and Cookie McGee, Andrew Jr. Boy Jones featuring Kerry Lee Pye, Pat Boyack and those pesky Javelinas, Mr. Houston and the Icebreakers, KNON's Blues Band with J-Mac and Sonny Boy Mark, with special guests Zach Harmon, Brown, Aaron Burden Trio featuring Stompin' Bill Johnson, Leo Hall and the Texas Blues Machine, Johnny Red and the Roosters, Doro Danny Hill, Larry Lampkin, and Leno and Company. Tickets are only $10 and available now at KNON.org. Bill's Records, Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, and all the Red Hot and Blue locations.
KNON on Twitter at KNON893FM.
Follow us now.
Be the first to find out about KNON events and get updates on KNON. That's KNON893FM on Twitter for updates on benefits, programming, and more.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Caffett here in the studio with Patty Fink, and our guest is Robert Kamina. He is the filmmaker of the new film, Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. You're just finishing up your fundraising right now. If people are interested, they can go to KaminaEntertainment.com, get more information about that. You're trying to raise a little bit more money before you release the film.
Yeah. They just go to Kamina Entertainment, which is C-A-M-I-N-A, entertainment.com. They can learn more information about how to support the film.
Good. What are some of the things, and we're coming up to the end of the show, so I want to jump ahead. What are some of the things that came out as a result of the Raid of the Rainbow Lounge?
A lot of good, you know, good things came out of the Raid of the Rainbow Lounge. As I mentioned, there is a revised public intoxication policy. There's a revised bar check policy. There was a liaison to the Fort Worth LGBT community, Sarah Stratton. She was
from from Fort Worth PD.
Did I say Dallas?
No. Okay. It's just from Fort Worth, but it was from the specific to the police department.
Fort Worth PD. It is now Kelly Whitehead, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The chief and the liaison joined the diversity task force, which was formed after the raid, to advise the mayor and city council of issues related to the LGBT community. The diversity task force came up with, I think it was, I don't have the facts in front of me, I think it's 21 recommendations to address the LGBT community. And one of them, as you mentioned, was the amendment to the anti-discrimination ordinance, adding transgender, gender identity, and gender expression to the. But that was on the table. That was already being discussed prior to the raid.
And some of these things had been out there. I mean, these things didn't come from nowhere.
Right.
But that was one that, okay, and here's one, we've been discussing it, let's put it on the table now.
Yeah. It definitely added, I think it kind of added momentum.
Another thing that happened as a result was a new organization was formed in Fort Worth called Fairness Fort Worth. And I believe that's the first time Fort Worth ever had its own advocacy organization.
Or at least one that's this visible. You know, I think poor Fort Worth, you know, I mean, we've, and I say poor Fort Worth in the kindest of ways, but it's an incredibly diverse community, and it's had a really tough time, I think, over the years organizing. Because everybody's kind of like carries on with their lives. And, you know, there's a pride picnic, and there's a pride parade, and And but like an LGBT newspapers had a real tough time making it in Fort Worth, you know, kind of go up for a while and come down, and so there's not been this drive, I think, really to organize in some really formal way. Well, and I think that's often a good thing. I think we're way too organized over here in Dallas. We have too many organizations, all this stuff. But, you know, Fort Worth kind of organically was fine.
Fort Worth has always been more of a suburban community, even though it's not. I mean, Fort Worth has grown. It's the 16th largest city in the country now.
Right.
But it's kind of been in Dallas's shadow, and this got it out of that.
Well, Fort Worth has, in my opinion, had a small town mentality, you know, especially the LGBT community. It's kind of like, you know, everyone minds their own business. And so because of that mentality, there wasn't a unified LGBT movement until this happened, until this raid happened. And it kind of brought people out. And when Queer Liber Action did, you know, made their appearance at city council, you know, the people who ended up forming Fairness Fort Worth kind of created an organization that was the rational, if you compare it to the radical.
The way they would have put it is doing it the Fort Worth way.
Well, you know, that phrase. But, you know, as someone said in my film, you know, you have to have the radical for them to listen to the rational. So I think they really did, you know, help each other out. But Fairness Fort Worth came forward. They helped facilitate interviews with witnesses and multiple investigations. They created a witness interview form. They arranged pro bono attorneys for witnesses, so to help facilitate a thorough investigation. You know, and they've been going on strong for now 2.5 years now.
And I think that's really important, just the whole concept of they weren't there to be just the radicals. They helped come up with these 21 recommendations, and they weren't going to take garbage from the city council to say, no, we're not going to do these things either. I mean, they were real strong that way. But their real approach was, let's work with the city. They approached the police department and sat down with Jeffrey Halstead, the police chief, and said, I know you want to talk to these people. Do you understand most people in the gay community don't trust the police? So here's what we can do to help you. You want to investigate. We'll get attorneys for each of the people who are witnesses. We'll get people to sit down with attorneys first, pro bono. They can sit down with the attorney. They can talk to them. And the attorneys understand the importance of witness information. And the police chief, I think his attitude really was, oh, wow, these people really do want to work with us and help. The attitude wasn't, okay.
The work definitely came from both sides.
Yeah.
I think both TABC and the Fort Worth investigations had to be open for help. You know, I think that it really, to both their credits, it took a lot of strength and took a lot of strength.
One of the things that hasn't come out really is TABC's attitude toward what happened from the top. Alan Steen, who's the administrator at TABC, he was actually on the phone with Chad's family that Sunday. He understood from the beginning that something had gone horribly wrong in this. In this raid, which wasn't supposed to be a raid, it was supposed to be an inspection. He understood that day, as soon as he got a report on this, that there was something wrong. So TABC's attitude certainly was, and didn't know how to get through to the gay community to help, and was in a position of, okay, we're going to be sued on this one again, because there had been a number of other incidents with TABC over the years where they've been sued and lost. But he understood. Whereas I think with the police department, it took several weeks before.
It took a while. You know, Chief Halstead had only been a few weeks on the job. He was real green. And I think he got a trial by fire. Mm-hmm. He really did, because he made some remarks very early on that really he caught a lot of flack for.
He was just reiterating what his police officers had told him.
He took his officers' words and just went from there without doing the investigation first. He quoted the officers as facts without looking into it.
Looking back on it, though, isn't it his job to back up his officers?
I think there was a way that he could have done both. He could support his officers without making inflammatory allegations.
Without alienating the community?
Mm-hmm.
But he did a good job and did come around. I mean, looking back at it historically, wouldn't you say, Patty?
Yeah, and I thought he was very open. We had some dealings with him through the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance, and I thought he was certainly searching for some ways to shepherd the department and the city through a process of change. And I thought he did a really good job there. And he had come from Phoenix.
Yeah.
And in Phoenix, they had, an LGBT liaison officer program, and they're, this
which
is not...
Which was actually started by Ben Click, who came from Phoenix and became our police chief here in Dallas.
Right.
So they have a history of having liaisons way before we had it here in Dallas.
Well, I think his efforts are sincere. I mean, that's my perception.
It was my perception, too.
That, I really don't... I don't think he's a homophobe. I mean, he was classified as that very early on based on his remarks and interpretations of his remarks, because they were...
And I guess what I'm saying is, I think really looking back on it, all he was doing was backing up his officers, which probably is his number one.
In a very naive way, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been done. He could have been backing it up, because you definitely need to back up your employees. There's that trust issue,
mm-hmm.
Especially as a brand new chief. They don't. You have
they
to
don't
gain
know him.
Right. But he defended his officers' actions, and there was a guy in the hospital with life-threatening injuries, and he's defending his officers' actions. There was a better way to do that than the way he did. But I think as history has shown now, two and a half years later, I don't think it was said with malice.
Right. And it took several weeks, but he started working with this brand new group, Fairness Fort Worth, who got all of the witnesses, or as many as possible, to testify. Not everybody who was at the bar actually did, but many did.
And that's that was probably a massive hurdle too, because imagine, just from an LGBT community perspective, one of the reasons we have liaison officers with police departments around the country is because it's very difficult for many people to report crimes. They're incredibly underreported, and so because there's the issue of coming out if they're in a state or a community where they can lose their job if somebody thinks they're gay. All of those fears, and to come forward and be a witness to something that occurred around you, maybe not even to you. That was a big hurdle to mm-hmm. go through, and I commend everybody involved for and especially the witnesses mm-hmm. who stepped forward. That was cool.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, I guess it was about 10 weeks later, a bar in Atlanta was raided.
Mm-hmm. The Atlanta Eagle.
Similar circumstances, but different. I know you haven't been investigating that one particularly, but what's the comparison between the two?
Well, the comparison between the two is that, first of all, it happened so close to each other. But from what I understand, a tactical unit called the Red Dog Unit, I think it was called, raided the Atlanta Eagle very aggressively, tried kicking down some doors, threw everyone to the ground, kept them on the ground, confiscated cell phones, arrested some of the employees, none of the customers. But it was...
But customers were all on the floor.
From what I understand, yes. I don't have all those facts. But it was traumatic, nonetheless, for these people. The outcome hasn't been the same. They did file a lawsuit. They did settle. They settled actually earlier than...
Pretty quickly.
...than the Fort Worth TABC. But the mayor and the police chief have been the complete opposite of Mayor Moncrief and Chief Halstead. They have not been as receptive and as progressive as Fort Worth.
One other outcome in Fort Worth. Fort Worth did finally settle, and so did TABC.
Mm-hmm.
I think they don't admit any guilt or any responsibility, but here's some money and you can all go home and shut up, but it's the way to just settle. So there has been a settlement in this. Are there any other pending suits or anything?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, that's There could be, but I'm just not aware of them.
And so basically, right now, 2.5 years later, the story actually is finally settled.
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the questions I've been asked along the way, is when's the movie going to be out? When's the movie going to be done? And I think this has been a real good, closure. You know, we have an ending. It's been a very rocky journey, but the movie doesn't just concentrate on the raid. Concentrates on the journey with Fort Worth being a leader in LGBT equality.
So your movie's coming out in March?
Yes, we'll have the world premiere in Fort Worth in March, date to be announced, but check the website, Facebook.
And then from there, have you had any nibbles about interest, like from Logo or from anywhere else?
I will be doing the film festival circuit and going from there.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for waking up at 4 in the morning in order to be here on time. We'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly. Our guest will be Scott Whittle, who's the new executive director of the Cedar Springs Merchants Association.